Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody? You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you. And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, September 6, 2019, broadcasting from www.gospelrevolution.com, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. These 10 mil Adderalls are great. We're coming to you people can only hear what the goes on. We're coming to you from the heart of the gospel, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext or a subtext. But right now, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. How are you, Michael?
Good morning, Don. I am wonderful. How is your day, my friend?
Mate, I don't know. It's like, you know, a mate was telling me that he went out and hit the booze one night and came home and found he was married and woke up with her next to him, and he said, well, I could have done worse. I kind of feel that way about, in fact, I even wrote a song about that. Would you like to hear it?
No.
There's no papa mama. There's no, none of that.
I still don't want to hear it.
Of course you do. You know you do. You know how people do.
I know they don't want to hear it.
Do they tell you that?
They do. Repeatedly. What kind of? I get the biggest number amount of calls that I get is please tell Don to stop playing those stupid songs.
Who are they? Tell me their names, because I probably know where they live.
Yes, you do. And you know who they are, and they're all lying to you. They tell you they like it. I'm telling you, they say they don't like it.
I'll do
anything to get this stopped.
I think you're telling
a lie, cheat.
Yeah, I think you're telling me a porky pie there. Somehow I just got that feeling.
Al Vitale told me he was just going to throw up if he heard another one.
Oh, well, for Al, I give him in Italian. I give him volare, volare. Yeah, I'll give him all the good stuff. He'll like it. He will die liking my Italian songs. Italian bluegrass. Now, there's a thought.
Now, that's a hallucination.
No, I think that's the Adderall speaking, but I can't be sure. Hey, listen, mate. We have, we're hard up against Calgary.
Yeah, how did this happen?
Oh, mate, it all happened. So, you know those little things that that you see in your rearview mirror. Things may be closer than they look.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Well, tell me about Calgary.
The meetings begin on Friday the 20th. Wade Brewer is going to be with us. He's going to be speaking on Saturday night along with myself. Wade always has some wonderful things to share. However, Wade loves to speak about 30 minutes, and our crowd, I remember, is either a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I thought, Wade's got the session. This gives me a chance to take a relax and a break, and I'll just leave the whole thing to him.
Yeah.
And he got up and spoke for 30 minutes and said good night, and everybody just sat there looking at each other. So.
Oh, my gosh. Well.
Yeah, they felt a little robbed. They didn't feel robbed based on what they heard, but they're there for the duration. You know, you don't travel and fly and drive and rent a room and, you know, put the donkey in the stable and to come in and have 30 minutes of time in the room that evening. They're there for the whole enchilada, as you would say. So we did the Hebrews series, but we did it topically, And instead of a verse by verse, we are doing Hebrews again. I can't even tell you at this moment, is it going to be a verse by verse? We obviously cannot cover all of Hebrews during that time. But the understanding of Apollos, which we'd already introduced that at the last conference, but it has just exploded on us. The benefit of knowing that has exploded on me just in an incredible way. Even it has even affected the teaching that I do on Galatians. The letter that Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, it has affected so much to know that there was a cohort to Paul who picked up Paul's gospel. One of the most wonderful things that I finally comprehended about it, actually, Don shared with me, and that was the fact that this writer of the book of Hebrews, Paul made it clear he got this from Jesus 3 years of time out in the desert with Christ himself. This writer is extolling the virtues of the teacher who he learned this gospel from. So coming into the gospel the way that I did, I can tell you, I'm sure that there were people who said things that jogged my thinking. But, you know, to this very day, gosh, I can turn on any of the most religious of the religious, and occasionally they'll say something about grace that's actually correct. So I don't know who might have, they certainly don't take it to any place that is a logical conclusion. But I never got to talk these things out. I didn't get to hear a teacher. There were people who were very influential along the way and still are, because I'm still learning the gospel. Goodness, one of the guys that traveled with me and worked for me for a few years, the one who challenged me about the redemption of the whole world, which I balked on and commanded him not to ever bring it up again, all the way to Jeff Robertson. Goodness, I've learned really wonderful things from Jeff. Al Vitale, goodness, when Al calls, I know I'm going to learn something. And then my conversations, of course, with Don have been priceless. To incorporate those into the understanding that began to dawn on me all those decades ago, I can't even tell you now how long, because it's been so slow in coming. I've envied those who have heard something so powerful in their description that everything flipped at once. That's amazing for me. And that was the situation with Don. Don heard one tape and heard one thing, and not all of his doctrine changed, but his entire perspective changed of the gospel. But Don has helped me tremendously over major issues pertaining to the gospel, and I love that. And I almost envy Apollos, because he got it that way too. He says, I learned from these teachers. So I can't relate to Paul, because Jesus didn't take me into a desert and teach me. I'm just not real sure how I got it. But so here we are. What this has done for me, I fully expect to happen there in Calgary. I mean, this has made my daily life richer. This has had an impact, folks. And I have no hesitations in telling those who are planning on attending that you will go away from this with not just more knowledge, not just more insight, but the way you think will be sharpened. The focus will be sharpened from a gospel perspective. And if you want life to change, let your perspective of life change. Let the way you think about life change. Unless the way you think about life changes, then nothing about life changes. Or let me say they are superficial changes at best, unless there's a mind shift. And this is major. For me, it has been major. I just am hoping against hope that I don't stumble over myself and that I can actually communicate what it is I have in my heart. And what we've learned on this is just so powerful. I'm wanting to share this. So I'm going to fall back on my, I'm going to be praying all the time. Holy Ghost, you're the great teacher. Please, please help me. This is way beyond me. This is too magnificent for this man to even be able to even try to communicate. So that's where we're going, and that's what we're going to be doing. So get to Calgary. We're going to have fun.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, Mr. Williams, we are in Hebrews chapter 13. And we're coming up to a verse in chapter 13, namely verse 17, that has been used to smash people, to batter people, to tell people not to think for themselves, to tell people that they've got to follow the leader. And if they don't, by gosh, it's going to be bad for them. So we're going to take up where we left off. And that is in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 15 and 16 says words to the effect. So if you want to sacrifice anything, give a sacrifice of praise and give a sacrifice of good works. Do good and communicate. Don't forget these kind of sacrifices, which is, let's face it, a lot easier than carting a big old bullock to the priest for him to cut its throat. A lot easier. And then we come to verse 17, which says, obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they must give it. Let me read this to you as it was told to me. Mm-hmm. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for you.
God, did you go to church in 1500?
For they watch for your souls, as they that must give account. This is my best. I'll finish it in Winston. I'll finish it in Winston Churchill. That they may do it with joy, and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you.
I'll do it in Kenneth Copeland.
I can't do Kenny. I'd love to do Kenny. Oh, gosh. It'll be...
Don, I'm really looking forward to getting into this. Of course, you know my recap demon is going to kick in here before we're able to launch into this. And I just have to mention our last show, going unto him without the camp. That verse, which we camped on and I think brought to better light, as I've heard from other folks, people have never thought about this outside the camp thing. But when we look at the fact of who's writing this, Apollos, and why he is writing it, when you read, let us go, therefore, unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach, what he's doing is addressing people who are trying to approach the issue of Christ within the camp. That's what they were trying to do. They wanted this within the law, within the sacrifices, within the ceremonies, within the old priesthood, within all of these things.
They wanted this new stuff to be absorbed and assimilated and amalgamated with what they already had.
And Apollos failed to do that with this group, as Paul also failed. Now, Apollos was more successful with the Jews at the time. What Paul failed at, Apollos came right behind, and they just seemed to say, "Oh yeah, well, we understand this guy." Now, why we don't understand? We can look at all the characteristics that Paul had and how he presented and how this man presents. They are drastically different. All of the revelation of Christ that is in the Christian community right now all of their understanding, all of their approach is within the camp to this day.
Well, and it's within a camp they were never part of anyway.
Isn't that just the oddest coinkydink?
Man.
So that is the truth. This is a camp they were never part of. But you cannot name a denomination that is approaching this outside the camp. They are all approaching him within the camp.
Mm-mm.
Now, that's just the facts of the matter. They're all within the camp. So this is the gospel revolution, heart and soul. Put your hand on your chest and feel your heartbeat. This is the heartbeat of the gospel revolution. We have appealed. Our appeal is to come, therefore, unto him without the camp, because all denominations come to him within the camp. They're all within the camp. As Don pointed out to you, a camp that never belonged to them at all in the Gentile community. Now, it also says, bearing his reproach. Oh, my God. We are bearing his reproach.
Can I ask, what denomination do you know that does not bear reproach?
None of them bear reproach.
Okay. Just wanted to make certain of that.
None of them get what we get.
Yeah. Wow.
It's unbelievable. I mean, oh my gosh. You mentioned that Christ, let's take just one of the principles in this magnificent understanding that Apollos has presented, and that is the old priesthood and the new priesthood. Well, let's take that and the sacrifice, the old sacrifice and the new sacrifice, both performed by a goat and a former priesthood, now both of those roles being performed by Christ himself. One giving a full year's reprieve from sin consciousness. Wow! Can you imagine a church that would be able to offer one full year reprieve from any consciousness of sins? That's amazing.
Wow.
But what we have...
The Catholics do it, I think, for, what is it, a week or a month or something?
They depend on 1 week. I don't know whether they actually offer it, but Catholics seem to really depend on the 1 week deal. So.
Well, they're at least 1/52nd of the way there, aren't they?
There you go. And the Baptists have a one-day deal, you know, now I lay me down to sleep type thing at the end of the day.
They have a 1/365th.
And the Pentecostals have no relief from sin consciousness at all. They are a moment-by-moment self-examination. And, you know, I'm dealing with a young boy at the gym right now that is in a situation of Pentecostalism. And my gosh, it is like rescuing his life. I won't go into detail of it at all because of any confidentiality that he needs to keep. But I can tell you, folks, there's a gospel revolution going on in my gym right now. We met last evening to do a workout, and what I didn't fully realize is that he just desperately needed to talk after being in church on Sunday.
Oh, boy.
And was just devastated by what he heard. He felt the pull back to all of that and all of the negative things. And so instead of working out, we talked. We sat on the benches and talked for an hour and a half. And I thought, well, we'll do our workout and do this. So I started doing my ab workout, and he just continued to talk, and we just stopped altogether. Folks, this stuff is hazardous. It's dangerous. It's toxic. This approach to Christ within the camp, and then all of the paraphernalia that goes along with it. Folks, if you're within the camp and you're experiencing Christ and you're experiencing him within the camp, you got to decorate this thing. You got to fill in your own blanks. It creates blanks spots in your understanding. So what happens? You have to fill in the blanks yourself. What does that create? Another denomination. But see, outside the camp, there's nothing to gain. There's nothing, no blanks to fill in. Now, is there a reproach to it? Yes, there is a reproach to approaching the entire gospel, the entire issue of the gospel, totally without the camp. There is a reproach. Paul talked about bearing his reproach. Apollos, I think, spoke of the very same thing. But bearing that reproach is this reproach that was coming from people who believed then and advocated that all of this had to take place within the Jewish realm. And Jesus drug his cross outside the entire Jewish realm to be able to say that this entire thing was for the entire world. I want you to think about that just a moment. Every step that Jesus took to get that cross outside the camp was to the advantage of every human being on the face of planet Earth.
What was that thing that you came up with during the week after our last podcast about him taking his cross?
We didn't say that during the...
I don't think we did.
The whole thing was that if we didn't or if we did, it bears repeating, that the desperation, the entire thing was geared to get that cross outside the camp, that the only part of the crucifixion that took place was Jesus dragging the cross outside the gate. And all of this took place outside the gate. All of it was outside the reach of Judaism. All of it was outside the law. All was outside of its sacrifices. All of it was outside of its domain. All of it was outside of its control, its influence. All of it was there. And Jesus drug his cross out there for the benefit of the whole world. Now, Jesus... had he been crucified in Jerusalem, it would have still done the same thing. However, the understanding would have been clouded by the whole issue of what takes place within the camp. This is so dynamic. This should be a dynamic thought on a daily basis, Don, of your relationship, quote unquote, with Christ. Is that all of this was done outside the camp. Everything about your relationship, everything about your concept about the about Christ and what he did should all be absorbed in this focus, and that is that it all took place outside the realm of Judaism.
Now today, if you are in religion or if you are a good Christian, in fact, if you're a good Christian, stop it right now. Just stop it right now. Because to be a good Christian, you have to be seen to be doing certain things. You have to be seen to be believing certain things.
You have to be heard saying certain things.
Absolutely. But the thing is that it never, ever resolves. Christianity, as a religion, never resolves. And the proof of it is this: A, if you ask too many questions, you'll be excommunicated. And now I know that that doesn't walk on all fours, but I think you and I can talk about this and prove that that's true. Mm-hmm. If ever you want, my phone number is 615-243-2754. And the other thing is that with religion, you always hit the brick wall of, oh, well, God's a mystery, you know. God is mysterious.
Yeah.
The ways of God are not for us to understand. His thoughts are so much bigger than our thoughts, but he is a good God. Yes, he is. There is a Category 5 hurricane sitting on the Bahamas right now, but those people who get hurt and die, he's a good God. No, it just doesn't. The story needs to not be cobbled together with big, ugly stitches that make it look like a quilting party that went wrong.
Looks like a Frankenstein.
It is a Frankenstein. exactly what it is. Oh, well put, mate. But it needs to be one contiguous, seamless story.
Yeah.
And the only place that I've met that story is in redemptionism, in the gospel of grace, the gospel of peace. It actually makes sense to me. See, even as a pastor, I still had to admit that I didn't understand a whole bunch of things. Now, I still don't understand a bunch of things, but there are a whole bunch of different things. Now I understand how God, from before the foundations of the world, right to this very moment in time, bore out one story that he planned before time even began.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when I was trying to make sense out of everything, I was inside the camp. I had to make sense of everything, which included the fact that I was an awful wretch of a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
I was saved by grace, sure,
but
still a sinner. Not free, not perfect, not holy, not righteous. But now I read a story. Yesterday I sent Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution an email, and part of the email, because, see, it was Father's Day in Australia yesterday, and first Sunday in September, and I just said to him, thank you for fathering me in the gospel. And I cannot tell you how much more peace I have without having to, well, what about this? And where does this fit in? And where does the other, or what about the rapture? And what about if I die with sin in my heart, an unconfessed sin? And what happens if, am I in God's perfect will? Am I in God's, I don't have any of that crap anymore.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
You are welcome, Don. And it has been our paths crossing has been just bordering on magical, and we're all grateful for it. I know that the people in the Gospel Revolution are certainly grateful for that. I am certainly grateful that one of the things I was sharing with this young man last night was Galatians, and I repeated to him over and over and over, you that are justified by the law, you're fallen from grace, and Christ has become of no effect unto you.
Wow.
You that are fallen, you that are justified by the law. And it took me saying it a multitude of times to him before it clicked. And I said, tell me what you are not hearing. And it was really weird because I would tell him to say, tell me what he was not hearing, and what he would do is tell me what he knew. And that is, well, you know, it just gets to a point to where that God just don't accept you anymore because of what you've done. In some words, he said that repeatedly. And I just kept quoting the verse because I knew I was having to take a hammer and a chisel and to crack through this. And boy, when he finally heard it, he said, it actually says that?
Oh.
Now, I'd been quoting it the same way.
Yeah, how many times had you said it before?
Oh, I don't know how many times. I lost count.
See, that's it. When your filters are in place, that's all you can do is see through your filters, hear through your filters, and then suddenly the bell rings.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he finally understood the people who were judging him Sunday morning were the people who had fallen from grace. And I had to tell him, now, falling from grace does not mean that you're on your way to hell instead of heaven. Falling from grace means that you're not experiencing the benefits of being who you are. Don, just the one thing that you mentioned, getting out of bed every day with the false perspective that you were a sinner and you got saved during your lifetime and now you are righteous because of a prayer that you prayed. And I remember I even went through with him. I said, so this is how it goes. And I put my hands out like we were joining our hands in prayer. Dear Jesus, come into my heart, come into my heart and forgive me of my sins, forgive me of my sins. Completed the little prayer, and I stopped, and then I looked at him, and I said, and that is the difference between heaven and hell?
Oh, wow.
And
no two denominations have the same set of words.
No.
Like you just forgot, and I closed the door of my heart, Jesus, with you on the inside. You forgot that bit. I'm not sure if he got saved.
So, but you see, we folks, when your mainframe is already been programmed, the software isn't going to change anything. It just is going to cause everything to muck up, and regardless of what's on the mainframe.
That is a really good picture. So we are the hardware. You and I are the box of tricks with the RAM and ROM and whatever else and the hard drives. And then we get served some software at birth or later, and that software...
Incompatible.
Wow.
It is incompatible. And if you ever tried to operate a computer its core is not designed to take the software you're using, oh my gosh.
You'll know.
Everything becomes more difficult. Every moment, it doesn't mean you can't get the job done, but you are going to experience a great deal of frustration, a great deal of anxiety, a great deal of, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to do it. I'm lost. All of that's going to happen. But folks, that's what happens when you are living out your life with even this one concept, and this is just one now. This one concept that at some point in your life, you became a Christian, and that before that you became a Christian, you were lost. Before you became a Christian, you were on your way to hell. After you became a Christian, you are now on your way to heaven. What you just created is an entire concept of the cross that is within the camp, a whole different camp. But still within the camp. But, you know, that's they even call them camp meetings, you know. a little bit revealing there.
What about your old friend? He had the best camp meetings. R.W.
R.W. Shambach. Oh, my gosh.
You don't need. What is it?
Yeah. You don't have no problems. All you need is faith in God.
Yeah. And they call it faith because there ain't no facts to back it up.
No, there is no. That's one of the subjects we covered. I asked him, I said, do you know why they call it a belief? Belief, by its description, connotes doubt. You can't have belief without doubt. There just is no such thing as belief without doubt, because belief by itself means I don't have facts to back this up.
So hang on. I believe in a rapture.
Where are the facts?
Well, I believe in hell.
Oh, where are the facts?
Well, I believe that when I said the magic prayer, the sinner's prayer.
Where are the facts? They're not there, Don. They're just not there. The thing that I am telling this young man more than anything is what's not in the Bible. I haven't even gotten around to what's in the Bible. I'm showing him what's not in the Bible. Making sure he understands. You know, there's no place that says to make Jesus your personal Lord and Savior. And that is all within the camp, and they all teach that you must make Jesus your personal Lord and Savior. There is not another doctrine that will supersede, that may be equally as false, as this one, but none supersedes this issue of making Jesus your personal Lord and Savior, as being there are no facts to back that up.
None.
There's zero.
None. And I'm sorry about the rabbit trail here, but moreover, it is unsubstantiated by history. Now, you're talking about a Lord, and so you're necessarily talking about medieval times.
Yeah.
Who the hell was ever able to say, Jimmy, I think you'll be Lord this? It didn't happen.
I'm going to make you my Lord this week.
There's only one person who could make someone a Lord, and that was a king.
Yeah.
And a serf, a peasant, could not make anyone a lord. So we've taken this medieval concept, we've put 2020 on it and called it Christianity, and It's BS, friend. It's BS.
Oh, to the highest order. I mean, we can't even deal with it gently and make it palpable for you, because it's just, it really is just crap. There is not a single line of it that can be substantiated in New Testament or Old Testament. It's just not there.
But maybe if we put enough sugar on it, it'll taste like chocolate.
For some reason, I just don't think that's going to work.
Hey, it might taste like chocolate.
I'm absolutely convinced it will not taste like chocolate.
That's the stuff that Paul was talking about, in, you know, when he talks about being the Pharisee of Pharisees. He actually lists all this accolades that we would sort of like, well, that's pretty commendable, Paul. And he says, well, I count it all, but, you know, and the actual word is dung.
Rubbish, yeah, we got it.
Yeah, we clean that up. You know, we got to help God out. The reality is he saw it for what it was, and sadly, so many of us have a hard time acknowledging that self-effort and the life of God are pretty far apart.
Yeah, the real problem with religion is you're calling poop chocolate. Is that what you're saying?
I did not see that coming.
No, that's what it really is. You've got poo here, and you're going, this is chocolate. And people are eating it going, dang, I thought chocolate would taste better than this. Oh, well, you can't say that, because you're just being rebellious. You're just being a fool. No, you couldn't. No, I'm not.
You did.
I'm telling you. That's what we're doing. And it's the people who kept saying, you know what? I got to tell you, it tastes more like poo.
Oh,
I think that's great.
Wow.
That's great.
Wow.
And Paul could just say, oh, it was poo.
Yeah.
And then when the Galatians start eating poo again, it's probably chocolate. He goes, oh, hold a minute. Yeah. No, not chocolate. Poo.
Not chocolate. Not chocolate.
That's,
not chocolate. This is great.
It is great, because
it's a title right there, not chocolate.
But we sit there with our little poo, and we keep stirring it around going, you know, if we just add something here, we just add a little more sugar, a little more butter, this is going to be better chocolate.
No,
and it's not ever.
No. It's never chocolate.
That's impossible.
Sweetened chocolate and sweetened caca are two different things.
Uh-huh.
Folks, we may be on a bit of a rabbit trail here, but you've got to understand that where we are in all of this right now, this bears repetition. This bears rehearsal. These things are needed because did I get it so directly clear in speaking with this young man this weekend, and the immediate impact he had. He's been enjoying the last two or three weeks, for a month or two, almost 2 months now, of beginning to experience what it is to be free. And one Sunday, he goes in and hears this sermon, and this poor young man, oh my gosh, he was dead. But, you know, thank goodness that he had the wherewithal to look in the right place to find resolve to this. And he called me and asked me if I was going to work out, or sent me a text. And I thought, oh, great, I've got somebody to work out with this evening during my time off. And it turned into this instead, which I was more than happy to do. It was absolutely wonderful to be able to have... my time is restricted here. Even my efforts in the gospel revolution are limited. I think they've gotten more effective as they've gotten more limited. But to have the opportunity to sit and to have actually three people at the gym now who are all in their different ways experiencing a gospel revolution in their own lives.
Wow. Now, family, later in this show, we're going to be talking about a pledge drive. And I want you to know this is what your money buys. It buys an office in Lebanon. We had no idea we were going to be present in Lebanon. It buys a powerful presence in Kenya. It's bought a presence in Burma. And here, and well, of course, with Michael, he can't help himself. He's hopeless. He just, wherever he goes, he touches people because he recognizes, and can I recommend that we all need this? He recognizes a live one and then sets him free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he does.
Yeah, because I waste no breath sharing the gospel. I have no words for those who have no questions. It's a wonderful thing for sure.
Gospel Revolution.
I think that was a great recap, Mike. And it's nice to be able to make a differentiation between outside the camp and inside the camp.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying, I guess, family, is that inside the camp is comfortable. Inside the camp is safe. Inside the camp, you don't ever have to think for yourself. Aren't you glad that I'm here to do your thinking for you? My name is Pastor. And inside the camp, there's no surprises.
No reproach.
No reproach. No surprises. If you can't answer a question, well, it becomes a mystery. That's inside the camp. Outside the camp, well, it's like those chickens that I set free, the battery hens. When I put them on the grass for the very first time, they felt grass under their feet, not wire. They didn't even know what to do. You could go and pick them up. They weren't. They were probably scared of me, but they didn't know they could move to get away from me. See, freedom carries this awesome responsibility of thinking for yourself and acting for yourself.
Yeah.
That's why we say you're God in the earth. You can do anything you want to do. You don't have to help people who are less fortunate than you, but when you do, you're being God in the earth. When we come out of that religion, the freedom is almost too much for us to bear. So we're going to read from verse 17 of Hebrews chapter 13.
Let's get some obeying going on around here.
About time, yeah, about time. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves.
Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves,
for they watch for your souls. I saw a cartoon this week, and this old priest is saying to this young boy, God is watching you. And the boy says, why, is he a pedophile too?
Oh, God.
Well, I don't know. I don't know where the boundaries are here.
Well, I with that subject, that I don't think there are any boundaries because this is a plague on the earth. So I have no hesitation about the correlation that is implied there, and it's bad, folks.
That was Michael trying to sound diplomatic, by the way, family.
Yeah.
Obey them that have the rule. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, and this word obey is right in the middle of it. Yep.
Oh yeah, obey. I gotta obey Mike. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't want to get on top of this now, but let's get on top of it just a minute with what you have brought up here. Do you know that that's actually what is told to children when they're concerned that they're doing something that is not right? Do you know that what they are told is, I am the one who must give an account? See, they read this verse, Don. You're not going to have to give an account. If this happens to be wrong, you will not have to give an account for it. I, your shepherd, will have to give the account. You will answer for none of this if it should happen to be wrong.
Oh, boy.
That is what is told. All right, let's try to move on. Because I think everybody knows my fervor about this subject and this cataclysmic breakdown of Christianity. Christianity does not create pedophilia. Christianity creates a haven for pedophilia.
Well, it's the best place, in my opinion, to go and look.
It's the best place to be also whenever you're wanting to hide. It provides sanctuary. It provides all the phraseology. It provides all the grooming mechanisms.
Okay. Pedal. Obey them that have the rule over you. What does that mean, mate?
Well, Don, what does that mean? I mean, here is an Apollo speaking of the people who shared the gospel with him.
Well, I can tell you how it was told me in Christianity. It was that the pastor rules over you, and I have to obey the pastor. Essentially, that's it. And, of course, if you're a Catholic, then it goes up the pecking order. Your priest is responsible to your bishop, is responsible to your cardinal, is responsible to your pope. But obey them that have the rule over you.
So what does it mean to obey, and who is them that have the rule over you? What does the Greek actually bring out here?
Well, let me just address this in English first. And that, who was writing? It was Apollos. It was a Greek Jew who was very well trained in the scriptures and also highly trained in the way of the Lord. Now, remember, there was only one other person who ever said, prepare ye the way of the Lord, and that was John the Baptist. And so Apollos here, he is saying, obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves. In other words, rearrange your relationships with you in the lesser or lower position. Now, who was he writing to? He was writing to the Hebrews,
mm-hmm.
Some of whom were still probably in Judaism. Without any question or doubt, mainline Jews would have read this. And without any question or doubt, the people who were in Jerusalem who read this, who came under the rule of James, the head of the church, Peter and John, he would have been writing to them. He would have been writing to those who had come into what was called the way, the embryonic Christianity, and he would have been saying, obey James, Peter, and John, and submit yourselves to them. Now, that, or obey your rabbi, or obey the leaders at the synagogue. That's how I read it. Do you see another reading in here, mate?
I don't. I was told many years ago that this actually was not in the original Greek text.
Okay.
Is that even a possibility? Can we shoot that down or entertain that thought at all?
Let's have a look.
So, Don, when we do something like this, we want to give you all the information that we have, and some of it we have not ferreted through all of it. But many years ago, I was told that this text was added to the Greek. I don't know that we can substantiate that here as we are doing this recording, prove it or disprove it. Whatever this means, it cannot contradict everything in the book of Hebrews up to this point.
For sure.
It just can't. You can't have one verse. Now, let's look at the possibilities here. If Apollos is speaking about his experience, then he is doing nothing more than giving the same honor to his teachers that he gave in chapter 1. That he learned this from other honorable teachers that he gave honor to, and all he's doing is saying it here once again, that this is what we should do, is that Paul would have been the focus of this statement. Is he talking about who the Jews were listening to? I doubt very seriously he would be encouraging them to obey them who were trying to put them in bondage. I doubt that very seriously. In fact, I think we can conclusively say he was not telling them after explaining all of the, or maybe I should say unexplaining all of the things that they had added to Christ from within the camp. They've drug it all outside the camp or drug Jesus within the camp. He's not going to tell them, obey all of that. Obey the people that told you these things. So there are admittedly, from my part at least, there are admittedly several ways you can look at this. The one thing it does not do is give someone the right to tell you they are your spiritual authority. If you're going to do this, you do it from your heart, not from theirs. This is not a demand the person can put on you. This is something that would come from you to them. The term obey, is that, does that mean exactly what it says, Don?
No.
Good start.
Yeah. It means to be persuaded.
Yeah.
It does not mean that you have to, of your own volition, mm-hmm. obey the word of somebody else. It means be persuaded by the ones who are leading you.
Mm-hmm.
There are people like Paul who have led these Hebrews. There are people like Apollos leading these Hebrews. In fact, all through Hebrews, Apollos speaks nothing like Paul speaks.
Mm-hmm.
Paul speaks with swagger and he marches with hobnailed boots into a situation and then lets off a fireworks mm-hmm. display afterwards. Not Apollos. Apollos is very meticulous in his styling, mm-hmm. very careful in what he writes, and he often writes, let us do this, let us do that, let us do the other thing. He even calls this treatise of Hebrews, he even calls it an exhortation in this chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is totally at odds with the concept of, oh, by the way, better bloody obey your lords and masters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a, it's football fields away from that.
So a bad old English translation here.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, be ye persuaded by the ones leading you.
Now, what about that have the rule over you? What does the rule mean? We know what we think that means. What does it mean to have the rule over somebody?
Edumenos means to be leading.
Those that lead. So not to rule over. So both of these, see how this translation got, folks?
When this was translated, King James, 4th of Scotland, 1st of England, King James was ruling the United Kingdom, and he is the one who commissioned the writing of the 1611, mm-hmm. the King James Version, and he was the head of the Anglican Church.
Yes. Well, and here we have this, I think, a possibly even a deliberate slant by them doing what was to be implied. The translators were obeying those that had the rule over them, knowing that they could lose their heads if they didn't.
Yeah. Yes.
So all that is used by Christianity is taken out of a translation that doesn't say what they are enforcing. And they do enforce this. And this is by no means is this an enforcement. It is not obey. It means to be persuaded by those who are teaching you, not those who have the rule over you. So that's where we have to be careful as we go through these to check up on the Greek and look at this. And as I said, even though I was told that this is no place in the translation, I think by virtue of the way it was translated, I could say that it is not in the original text at all.
Well, there is other considerations as well. And one is that we have no original text of the New Testament. I want you to consider this very carefully, family. There are no original texts. Mm. of the New Testament. They do not exist. The letter that Paul wrote to the Galatians doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a copy of that letter. The oldest that we appear to have are copies of copies. In other words, they're third generation copies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, The New Testament was not like the Old Testament. The Old Testament was rewritten and rewritten and rewritten and rewritten as those old scrolls wore out, new scrolls were written. Mm-hmm. But everyone that had even the minutest mistake were burned. That is a heavy price to pay when you're dealing with the skin of a sheep.
Yeah, and the job of a scribe, goodness gracious. I mean, this was a very specified duty that was to be performed by someone called a scribe.
Absolutely.
They had to be highly trained to do this. And they would self-govern themselves, that if they saw anything wrong with what they just did, and counter checks and balances to make sure that none of the story changed. Because for the Hebrews, the story was the most important part. We drive that home here at the Gospel Revolution. It's the story that counts. To me, it's irrelevant as to whether we can go back and factually pull out these events as historically taken place. The story is what causes this to all wind up at the cross and this magnificent revelation of us all being one with God. It's the story.
Now, in that story, and I was asked this week, did I take the Eden story, the story of creation, the story of creation, did I take it literally or allegorically? And I answered this man and I said, look, I'm open to be persuaded either way. But with the latest findings in DNA and other things, I don't see any reason to switch from my traditional view that it's literal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not to tell you that you should think that it's literal. I'm just telling you what I think and why. And in that whole story, I mean, the Hittites were laughed at prior to 1800. Not so much anymore, now that they found artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of those Old Testament things were laughed at. But you see, more and more things are being discovered to support the Old Testament, the Scriptures, exactly the way Jesus supported the Scriptures. Now, as for the New Testament, we don't make any bones about it here. We think that the New Testament is a commentary on the Old Testament. And we have to remember that when these texts were copied from one scroll to another, to another, to another, mistakes were made. Sometimes, in the flickering candlelight, the person who was doing the copying missed a whole line.
Mm-hmm. Or could have added a whole line or several pages.
Well, in that light, the most obvious one is this. There were scribes that wrote in the margins by way of explanation.
Now, you're talking about the New Testament.
But yes, sir. Yes. And then later scribes, they said, he forgot this verse and copied it in later, and they put it in as a real verse. So there's much to be considered in this, and I think that even if this verse was written by the hand of Apollos, the writer to the Hebrews, even if he wrote it, there are more than one way to skin a cat, and this verse could be read in a number of different ways. Certainly, it cannot be read as, obey them that have the rule over you.
As well as you do it, it can't be done.
Yeah. Yeah, it can't be done. And submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls. I don't see they watch for your souls. Where is that borne out anywhere else by any other writer? They watch for your souls.
And where is it borne out in this letter?
Well, see, here's the other thing. If the Holy are we to obey our pastors or are we to obey the Holy Spirit? Is our pastor the ultimate truth-sayer, advice-giver, is he, or is it the Holy Spirit? So we have to answer that question as well. And I know the old argument, the Holy Spirit can speak to you through your pastor. Well, he can speak to me directly too, can't he?
And through a donkey, evidently, too. So,
Just how, there you go. You had to bring the ass into it.
I just had to drag my ass into it.
Oh, dear. So we're not trying to evade this verse.
No, we're giving you everything we can see about it.
Yeah. That's what we're trying to do. And to who do they give account, by the way? As they who must give account. Who do they give account to?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Master of my house, captain of my ship. I'm just thinking that out loud, mate. And what does it mean if it's not unprofitable to you? If it that sounds awfully like a threat to me. We might excommunicate you if you don't.
It's certainly used that way.
Well, given all of the above, and given that Hebrews was kicked about and it was an uncertain book for inclusion in the canon, but given all of that, you know, this sounds awfully like to me, Michael. When Paul started teaching in his early days, he said, listen, everyone bring a psalm, somebody else bring a poem, someone else bring a scripture, someone else bring that, and that's how you should conduct yourselves in your meetings when you come together to remember Jesus. Now, by the time he gets to Timothy, it's, oh, there's deacons and there's bishops, and don't you know one is for the owner, a bishop should be the owner of one wife, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Now it's gone from charismatic in nature to constructed in nature. Big difference. And this sounds awfully constructed to me. If this was not written by Apollos himself, I wouldn't for a moment doubt that it was added by some bishop or priest 300 years later, because it sure suited the way the church was going.
It did indeed. So we've given you all we can, as far as I know right now. Now, we're also open to any of you guys offering any suggestions about this. The thing that I don't...
We'll ignore them, but send them anyway.
The thing that I do not want to wander away from this verse, still in contact, is your any previous concept that this is saying by any stretch of the imagination that you're supposed to obey any authorities whatsoever as a spiritual requirement from God. That just is not here. At best, you can get out of this is Apollos's exhortation. Even if we took it to its full extent, this is not scripture. This is not thus saith the Lord. Even if Apollos took leave of his senses, that he has been kept very well intact all the way through Hebrews, this has nothing to do with how this has been translated, and it has nothing to do with the way it has been applied.
And one last word is this, that in everything that we've read in this chapter, in this book, this verse pops out as something which is, well, which of these things don't belong with the other?
Yeah.
Like that old song from the Muppets. So now we're going to move on to, we're very close to ending this book. And when we have ended, what we're going to do is we are going to go back and start again.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we're going to run over the highlights. Verse 18, pray for us, for we trust we have a good conscience in all things, willing to live honestly.
He didn't say was living honestly. He just said he was willing to.
Yeah. What do you make of that verse, mate? I like that. It's a good get out that you mentioned.
I don't make anything out of it. Pardon me, Roy.
But is this the cat? Yes. But I beseech you the rather to do this, that I may be restored to you the sooner. Almost indicates that the writer is writing from exile or from prison or certainly from a great distance.
What does the word restored mean in the Greek? We might find it, something a little.
It means that you take a 1948 Chevy coupe and you restore it, mate. What do you think? All right. It's a complex word made up of one root and several lemma extensions for tense and so forth. that I might be being restored would be the – it is an ongoing tense, present tense, an ongoing present tense. Where is it? And it is aorist, yes, and passive. So it means that I'm going to go out and say that what he's saying is he's away from them and he wants to go back and see them soon. See, Hebrews, he writes to a very specific group of people, people who he knew, apparently. He replicates this when he talks about Timothy directly. But he's talking to people probably in Italy that he knew, and he just wants to go back and revisit them, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Let's continue.
But I beseech you the rather to do this, that I may be restored to you the sooner. What this is. What is this? I don't know what this is. Now, you could relate it back to obey your leaders.
Well, that to be willing to live honestly was the last statement.
But how would that restore him to them sooner? Any more than how would obeying restore him to
well,
them?
Oh, my gosh. I see it. I think I see it. He is telling them to do exactly what Paul was striving to do, and that is to be subject to these rules and regulations enough to where that you could have peace with the authorities.
Oh.
That's exactly what happened with Peter, James, and John. I mean, Paul agreed with them enough to where that he could still have a voice and still be accepted. And this was the ruse. My goodness, maybe we're talking about the ruse. You know,
a political... What's the word? Political
opportunity.
Resolution. Yeah.
Just taking political opportunity here. Okay, so now if I'm going to get, that's a good catch here, Don. So the reason for all this is instruction is so he can get back there. This is excellent.
Elaborate on that. I just got it.
This is excellent. So if we had not read in context, he says the reason he wants them to do all of this stuff, beginning with verse 6, but to do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased, obey them that have the rule over you, all the way down. So this is wonderful.
That was verse 16, by the way, family.
Yes, verse 16, 17, and 18. And it is all for this purpose, that I may be restored to you the sooner. The more you guys cause less trouble, I mean, this is completely in agreement with Paul's statement, live in peace as much as it is possible within you to do with those that are around you. And he was speaking of the Jews. He was speaking of Peter, James, and John in these. You know, don't go around deliberately causing trouble just because you're free from all of this stuff. So now these guys were moving in and out of these areas, preaching something that the Jews did not like. Now, the Jews were fairly liberal, actually, in what they accepted and didn't accept, as long as you kept their rules, as long as you kept the things that made them look good. So when you're around these guys, just obey them. Just do what they say. Because if you are an open, active proponent of this, and you're rebelling against them, when I get ready to come to town, they're going to say, we're not going to let the guy who taught them this stuff back into town.
Yeah.
Here Apollos is saying to them, I want to get back there really quick. I've just got this longing to be back. I know that I'm in my own heart, I'm supposed to be there. But if you guys don't conduct yourselves properly around the authorities through whom I have to pass to get there, they are going to delay my coming. Just think of all the places where Paul said, I would have come to you sooner, but I was forbidden.
I like that.
Yes. Yeah. What was wrong with our understanding? Now, see how far we had to meander around this? Just to admit, first off, what did we have to do? We had to admit we were lost as a goose in understanding this. Now, all of this is going to go to air because we want you to see what has to be done sometime to find the truth of a passage, you've got to follow the passage to the full complete thought. You don't get to the complete thought. And the thought is complete in verse 19 from 16, from beginning in verse 16 starts with, but to do good. And then that thought does not end to until verse 19, that I may be restored to you the sooner. So all of this is for one purpose, and that's to get me back there sooner. Wow.
Oh, that suddenly becomes clear.
It is just perfectly clear, especially with supportive evidence of this going on in Paul's life repeatedly and also in Apollos' life. Anybody who was preaching these type of doctrines at all, their comings and goings were monitored, restricted, forbidden in every way.
Their steps were dogged by Jews sent out from James to try and re-proselytize them and bring them back under the law.
Well, and who officially declared his rule over all of those who claimed the name of Christ? It was James. James is the one who took control. So he could be very... easily saying, you know, obey these dudes, you know, just say, yes, master, yes, master, yes, master, because we've got something greater that we need to accomplish. So satisfy their self-righteousness, satisfy their ego, satisfy their need to feel like they are in control. But in all reality, they are not in control at all. Do you know that's really weird? This is strange. This is really strange because do you know that I have given the same instructions to this young man?
Huh.
The very same instructions I have given to him this very week and over these last 2 months. I have advised him to lay low. Don't tell your church. Don't tell your pastor. Don't tell these people what you are thinking about. Just grin and go on. When he asked me, he told me yesterday, he said, I just feel like I've got to stop going. I said, if you must stop going, stop going. But see, this young man doesn't turn 18 until later on. And so even in his home, I mean, he's in a situation where that he is going to have to protect himself from the reproach. He's not ready for the reproach of this. Oh, my gosh. And here we were trying to figure this out, and here I have been this week living this out.
And family, that's all we can bring you this week. I would love to finish this out. There's only a few more verses, but we'll do that next week because right now we want to tell you about the pledge drive.
Mm-hmm. Don, we do have, we are in the throes of pledge drive. This is an extremely busy month for me. Any of you guys who can just go to PayPal and make your contributions, that would be very, very welcome. Those of you who can just give me a phone call, leave a message, whatever you would like to do, we really do need your support. But let me tell you now, I can't do this with a whole heart without being honest with you. We are on more steady and firm foundation financially than I can remember, quite honestly. But we want to keep that. We've got things we want to do and things that need to be done. And there's things that are being put on hold until we get to that place. We've had losses to our monthly income due to no fault of our own or of those who had to withdraw. So as you're considering what to do in the pledge drive, I want to ask all of you who are doing what you can, and if financial situation has changed to where you could do more, please increase your monthly. That will help us a tremendous amount, and we do appreciate it. I'll be calling you, probably have already called you, but if you have not returned the call, give me a call back. I am not Jeff Robertson, I'm not going to keep calling you until you answer your phone out of irritation. I just can't do it, folks. I just can't. So I'm going to call. If you don't answer, I'm going to leave you a message. And if you forget to call, you ignore the call, then that's where we're going to be ending this. There's many of these cases that Jeff was much more successful because I just can't do it. Everything in me turns upside down to do anything more than to leave you a message. But most of all of you are so eager that, I've got people that answer their phone and say, hold on, let me get my credit card. That's their first response to me. You know, they have limited time. They know my time is limited. But I also have some wonderful conversations during this time. So love to be speaking to you guys.
I wish I could add to that by saying that we are two older gentlemen who don't know how much longer we have to share the gospel. And we want every waking moment between now and when we are taken to our next life, we would like every waking moment to be as productive as possible. I know that many of you love the gospel. You love Mike. You think being free of religion and your past is just the very best thing that could have ever happened to you. And we have spent enough time in religion to know the very best ways to screw the most money out of people. I don't know any other way to put it. The reason you don't see us using those techniques that you see on televangelists, the reason you don't see us asking for you to give us a seed like Rod Parsley would, or Mike Murdoch would, or even Ken Copeland and an endless amount of people out there would. The reason we don't is we don't believe in that stuff. What we believe in is what we're doing. We want to get the gospel out. Just like Denise sings, we need to get the gospel out. And any help that you can be to us in order to help us achieve that goal, any help, you'll have our undying gratitude. So know that we are committed to living outside the camp and keep you living outside the camp. We are committed to the people who hear this gospel from our Lebanon office, people who've never heard the gospel before, people who hear the gospel from Moses Ngata there in Nakuru, Kenya, people who are hearing the gospel and we don't even know what they're hearing, but hearing the gospel from the gentleman from Switzerland who now is somewhere in Borneo. I want to say thank you to the man who bought the barbecue, us Aussies call a piece of the grill, what you call a grill, a barbecue. I want to say thank you to the man who bought the barbecue for Caloundra Backpackers and who reached into his pocket and gave me a tape. These thin threads that led you to the gospel and led me to the gospel, we want to keep those opening up for other people. And that's really all I know to say. I just felt the need to say something today.
Don, I think those thin threads are the things that we just don't know. You know, we spend money on advertising, and it's not inexpensive to advertise. You know, most years we advertise, there is no extra people that show up at all. But we have, in the last 2 years, received into our efforts from these advertisements. We have been able to see two different couples come in. Both have been very impactful in the gospel financially. And also one of them became the vice president of the ministry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do spend money on advertising there. Man, the years that I have lamented that we put the $1,500 into a newspaper ad or radio or whatever the combination might be or whatever the price may be. But I tell you, those two thin threads that got through have made an impact on this. That's why we have a ministry now in Beirut, Lebanon, is because of a $1,500 ad that brought one man in the door.
Yeah.
So the only thing we know to do is keep casting the nets and casting them as far as we can. And no matter how many times we draw up nothing, we're not going to stop casting the nets. So that's the full extent of the story. That's how this keeps going.
And let me just add to that, if you would like Michael to come to you, if you'd like him to hold a meeting in your area, call him on
832-318-9339.
And so it is, family, that we must leave you. If you would like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office once again. What's that number, Michael?
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. Hit any link. Right now it's pledge drive, so hit the donate link. But there are thousands and thousands of hours of articles and podcasts and spoken audio and videos. Make yourself at home. Now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in the heart of Redemptionism.
And it's good night from Michael Williams here at the Secret City. We love you guys, where we make no secret views about the gospel, and neither did the cross. We bear this reproach, gladly. If this is what a reproach is, oh my gosh, bring it on.
We shall hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast, and remember, we'll be here to do the same thing over again next week.
We've proven better.
Say, pal, if you want to stay single, this is my warning to you. When you're out drinking, don't mingle with gals that are lonesome and blue. If you don't want to get married, don't mix your kisses with wine. It's 20 to 1 that you'll wind up with a female palooka.
Gospel Revolution.